Welcome to the unofficial House of Wind Book Club, ran by two best friends and self-declared members of the Night Court.
Today we are discussing chapters 21 and 22 of A Court of Mist and Fury. I know you can hear me from the dark. I know you're listening from afar.
Libby, can I tell you what I'm really, really, really excited about?
What are you really, really excited about, Abby?
Do you remember when I said in the last episode, I will make sourdough bread no matter what happens to me?
I do, yes.
And do you know how I said it was very difficult and there's no way I could make sourdough bread?
Yes, I also remember that.
Hey, I'm really good at making sourdough bread now.
You are. You're very artsy with it, too. They're pretty.
It is my ADHD hyperfixation. I am obsessed with it at this point. So much so that when my friends were in town last week, I still managed to make like 5 loaves of sourdough bread and kept my starter going. His name is Mr. Bubbles. My starter's name is Mr. Bubbles. So
I don't think I've ever seen you take on a hobby that you didn't also perfect.
Well, so here's the thing about me. I like being good at stuff. So photography was a hobby and now it's my career. I got really good at sewing for a while. Do you remember that? I was making dog collars.
Yes.
I can do that. I used to paint and I really loved painting, but my new hyperfixation and why I'm glad I have ADHD is because it makes me really interested in stuff, so much so that I will research all of it and know everything about that subject. You could ask me any questions about the Italian electric system because that was my panic hyperfixation for a bit when we moved over here and why electric got so expensive here in 2022. Oh, don't worry, I got the knowledge. But right now it's sourdough bread and I like to paint on the sourdough because it's fun. It's really cool because I'm not doing it as a job or like for a profession.
Yeah.
I'm doing it because I like it. I've been posting my sourdough bread in our Aviano Facebook group and everybody's like, can I buy bread from you? One, we can't sell things over here, so I can't sell it. They can give donations if they want to.
Yeah.
But I've just been making bread for people, like lots of it. Like this week I made 4 loaves just because.
I love it.
I love it.
I'm ready to see your Night Court loaf of bread, though. I'm waiting for it.
I'm about to make an Instagram for my bread because I've been baking so much. And I think the first bread I'm going to share on there is going to be the Night Court one I paint next week.
Yes. And then you can tag our Instagram.
Yes. Perfect. Oh my God, I'm so excited. So yes, I made the bread. I got very good at the bread. And now it is my favorite thing. I'm actually going to test a new recipe this week, which is a big deal because I haven't changed recipes in the last month. I know how to care for a starter. I know how to troubleshoot. I almost killed my starter because I gave Mr. Bubbles, we're going to call him Bubs. I gave Bubs some bread flour instead of all-purpose flour. And apparently that is not his thing.
Okay.
All starters are different. And he threw a hissy fit for about a week. Your starter's supposed to rise double the amount that it currently is, and it didn't do that, and it was gross. And so Listen, I've learned so much about sourdough and I hope it's not a fixation that I like love and then never do again. Because remember how I crocheted a lot?
Yeah.
When we first started this, I haven't crocheted in months. I used to embroider a lot. I haven't touched that in 6 months.
Look, life got busy for the both of us, all right? There was a lot going
on. It did. But I feel like bread is like a really relaxing thing.
Yeah.
That's why I don't want to like dive in and bake all the time for people and make it like a career. That brings me stress. I just want to make bread because it's fun. My favorite part is, so this is going to sound really dumb and I've been talking about bread for 2 minutes and y'all are going to have to deal with it. When you score your bread, right, is when you like can put designs and like trace those designs and like score it, and then you put it in the oven, and then when you put it in the oven it's kind of a fucking guessing game. You never know what it's going to look like. So it could either rise up. It's called oven rise. So it can get like tall and pretty and like be circular and pretty like it's supposed to be. Or you could just have like a pancake.
Oh.
You never really know what's going to happen. You don't know how it's going to look. You're scoring. You don't know how that's going to turn out. So it's like a little game every time. So I open it up and see what I can do better next time. Or like, you know, how my bread did. So I'm really obsessed with it. I made one with bees on it. I made flowers. I made cool little designs. Also, side note, I should send you some of my starter, because do you know it is one of the best foods you can have for your gut bacteria health?
I did not know that. No.
Sourdough, basically the bread is already partially digested.
Okay.
That's where the natural yeast comes from.
Huh. So all the hard work has been taken out almost.
Especially with your tummy issues. I don't know. Can I tell you?
Sorry, I got the tummy issues.
Okay. Yeah. She got tummy issues called gastroparesis, where her tummy just sometimes takes a break from life. This would actually be one of the best breads for you because it's partially digested already.
Okay.
So it's really easy for your body to like take in and digest. It does not raise, oh, another thing, because high diabetics, it does not raise your blood sugar.
Ooh.
It is already partially digested, so it's better for your body.
Okay.
And it also has all the good natural gut bacteria, yes, enzymes and thingies, mm-hmm, from the natural yeast. So it is very good for you. It's good for your poops. So I will make you guys a poopy night court loaf and share it.
You're welcome.
This week, you're welcome. Libby, what have you been up to in the 2 months we've taken a nice little break?
A lot. Gosh, we are preparing for the end of a school year in our household, which my child is struggling to embrace the idea of moving on to the next grade.
Oh.
She has been led to believe by kids in the older grades that to go on to her next grade, she has to be able to like swim underwater.
Yep, that's, yeah, absolutely, of course.
I don't know where this came from. I don't know why or where. And my kid loves water. She loves to play in the water. She loves swimming. She hates water on her face, and not like she can handle rain. She can handle getting splashed. I think it's the way water feels going up her nose. She doesn't
Libby, wait a second. We're disregarding the fact that how does swimming have anything to do with going forward in a grade?
Right. We've tried explaining that too. She's like, well, they said.
Is there a correlation?
She's like, you don't know. They know. They've been to that grade. I'm like, I finished that grade longer than they did.
You're like, I would like to tell you I went there a long time ago. And the answer is that. No swimming is allowed.
Right. We're like, that's not a thing. And she's like, they said it was. Like, okay, mom. Right. Like, you know, you're old. And I'm like, I am not even 30 yet. You take that back.
Oh my gosh.
But so that's been great. She's like, I'm not going to that grade. I'm not doing it. I'm not going. I don't want to swim underwater. And I'm like, that's not.
No, now you just need to tell her that the entire class is underwater 24/7. She also needs to learn how to breathe underwater.
Get over it.
You're going to be fine.
You are not dropping out of elementary school. I'm sorry. No.
Could you imagine?
This is not the 1920s. You're not going to go work at some factory. We don't need that.
She is.
She's going to be the CEO of that factory.
Where they're going to breathe underwater.
Oh, man. She's underwater basket weaving. I don't know what.
Oh, I love it.
I'm like, which kid? Who said this? I want a meeting with this child and their parents. This is garbage.
I'm obsessed.
So that's been great. On a lighter note, I started playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which is part two of a remake of Final Fantasy VII, which was made a very long time ago, and the graphics were very pixelated and blocky and old school. And now they're beautiful and gorgeous, and the playthrough is so much fun and smooth. And it's been great. It's been a lot of fun. And your face right now.
I'm so glad for you, Libby. I'm so glad.
I'm speaking another language. Your eyes have glazed over. You're fairly awake right now.
Elizabeth, do you want to know my video game knowledge? I play two games, and they're both on the Switch because my hands can't do video game consoles.
Oh.
They're two games. I play Fae Farm, which is about fairies.
Fitting.
And I have named my Fae Land Prynthian.
Okay.
Of course. And then secondly, a stupid game. I hate that I love this game. It's called Bug Snacks. It's about bugs that are also snack forms. So like they look like snacks and then you can make people's arms into bug snacks.
Oh.
I'm glad you have like real adult video games.
We all have our guilty pleasures. There are games that we're a little bit embarrassed about. It's okay. I still go back on my Game Boy and we'll play Herbs. Which is Sims in the City. They were called herbs, like urban. I don't know why is what it's called.
Oh my god! I thought you meant herbs, like plants. I was very confused.
No, what? No. Oh no. Or yeah, we all have our guilty pleasures that we're ashamed of playing. It's okay. Bug Snacks. I haven't heard of it, but all right. Okay.
I need you to get Bug Snacks. They're really good.
Final Fantasy VII. One of my favorite parts is getting to ride a chocobo. And I made you look up chocobos earlier. You did see. And what did you describe that as? What did you say that looked like?
What?
A chocobo.
Oh, it looked like a chicken that wanted to be a dragon.
Fair enough. It's fair. It is. They're fast as fuck. They're insane fighters, and they're beautiful, and I want one, like a tattoo of one. They're gorgeous.
I trust you. I do.
And I know as an outsider, you're like, what the fuck is that? Why do you want this hideous yellow bear? It's not, though. It is a beaut. I want one.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
It really reminds me of Pokemon. That's the vibes I got. Fair.
Okay. I could see that. Yeah, my kid, Final Fantasy, by the way, the games are on Switch. So if you ever wanted to test the waters, because it is open world.
No, they're not. I just looked.
Final Fantasy is. Fallout is not. You looked at Fallout.
Oh, I thought they were the same thing.
It's okay. They're both F names. It's all right. It's okay. Oops. My kid loves to watch me play Final Fantasy, and she loves that there are little baby chocobos running around in this game. And she's always like, get them, follow them. And I'm like, whoa, no, I'm doing something.
Will it kill them?
No, she's like, follow it, go. And like, you can't actually harm these. It's cute. They're just there. They're just out running around. They take you to like little bus stops, which are like rest stops. So like when your health and like magic are low, you can go. And I know I'm speaking in a different language. You could go put a cushion down and like take a nap there basically and regain all your health and magic points, your AP.
That's nice.
So, yeah. Yeah, I know that makes no sense, but to me, like, it's like it's when you're, fine. Yeah, you could have battled and you take some really bad hits and like, instead of wasting potions and using your magic slots, you can like go take a nap on this bus stop and the little baby chocobos.
I would love to take a bus stop nap. Right?
They lead you to the little bus stop bench. And so like you can follow them. That's really cute. But that's all they do. You can't harm them. You can't actually capture or chase them. But she's always like, go follow them. And I'm like, no, I don't need to go. I don't need to do that right now. She's like, just do it. And I'm like,
she's like, but yes, you do.
So she also is really into the chocobos. She's a little scary with her video games. She likes to watch us play Fallout. She's a little more aggressive because you, in Fallout, you can have, how do I put this? I don't want to say alliances. You can have, be on good terms with anybody. It's an open world. You can do anything.
Okay.
Or not do anything. You can literally interact with anybody or kill anybody or not kill anybody. You can do anything with any non-playable character. There are no rules. Fallout is literally just, there's no rules. Because that's the point. It's a wasteland. It's a post-apocalyptic wasteland.
Okay.
That you can decide what you want to do in. And she really enjoys that there are no rules to this game. And so we would approach sleeping NPCs and she'd be like, kill them. And you're like, whoa, no. And she's like, just do it.
They don't need to die.
She's like the little meme with the Sith where it's like the Sith Lord. And he's like, do it. And you're like, no, stop it. And she told my husband, she was like, get stronger or like toughen up or something. And he was like, we are done. We are turning this off.
Toughen up, dude.
She scares me.
That's something I'd tell James if he was playing a video game.
Get stronger. Don't be such a little bee. Yeah, so she... She's very competitive, and I don't want to play with her, but I do because it's also really funny. So that's a brief check-in. Just going to drop that little bit of...
Libby?
That's a little insight in our household these days.
Can I tell you what's happening?
Yeah.
On the Aviano Facebook page, somebody just asked if they think their house is haunted. They said, hear me out. If anybody is a medium or something that can sense energies, we've been having problems with my one-year-old son's toys playing on their own for months now. I'd like to think it... What?
We just talked about this. I have the perfect guy for her. I can send Mickey.
I think it was a circuit issue or something, but it's affected 4 different toys. Sometimes simultaneously, sometimes weeks or months apart between instances. It happens all hours of the night and day, but primarily at night. She says, I 0 out of 10 recommend waking up to a toy music blaring through the baby monitor at 4 a.m. while your baby's sound asleep in their crib. I mostly just want to know if there's something going on.
Abby, do you want a bulletproof method into how to test if your house and toys are haunted? Go ahead and throw them away. And if they are still in your house the next day. If they come back, then yes, there you go. You don't need a medium. Just toss them out, get rid of them. And if they're still there when you get back, yes, it is. You're welcome. You don't need to pay Mickey the Ghost Hunter to sit in a lawn chair outside of your house and speculate.
God. Sorry, I know that's really off topic, but I just saw that. And she has a video of this one toy just going off and nothing's around it. And it shouldn't be going off.
About to get those ghost hunters bricked up with that post, man.
All right, Libby, on that note, would you like to know the question of the week? Or would you like to ask me the question of the week?
Yes, Abby, would you rather be able to talk to plants or understand what babies are saying?
10 out of 10, there's an easy answer to this. The answer is talk to plants, because babies do talk. You can understand a baby. If you're having a kid, there are like 6 different cries that babies have, and they all mean something different. And it is like beautiful. Once you learn what it is, what your baby's trying to say, you can understand them. Also, as somebody who worked in a daycare with toddlers and babies, you can get them. But plants are, I would love to know what an old tree has seen.
I was just thinking
that. All the stories from an old tree. That would be amazing. I would love to hear what a tree has. I wonder if like trees talk shit about people walking around. I would love to know what a tree says.
I bet they do.
I don't even need all plants, because I don't care what a cactus has to say.
Have you ever watched Wizard of Oz with Judy Garland, the older Wizard of Oz?
Yes.
Right? Okay. Those trees were jerks. Remember, they were throwing apples at them.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, that's the vibe. I get it. I bet trees really do feel that way.
I'd cut down all the mean trees. You don't deserve to live. It's been a day.
I would love, like, some really, like, judgy, sassy trees.
You know what I think are sassy trees? Weeping willows. I feel like they'd just be the sassiest. They're not actually sad. They're just like sassy just with their like, long hair.
They're just mean. They're like, we're gorgeous. What are you talking about?
Well, did you answer the question though?
I did not. No. As a one and done parent who does not wish to go through being around more babies more than I already have to. No, I don't want to talk to babies. I want to talk to plants.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I've got nothing against babies or people's kids. But I'm done with that phase of my life. I have a child that's not at all a baby.
Listen, I'm on a year countdown to that phase, and I still don't want to talk to babies, so.
I'm good. I'm not around babies enough that would be useful for me. I don't see babies often enough.
Also, what would they think? Milk? I'm hungry. I have to poop? Like, thanks for sharing.
I don't need to hear it. It's usually written on their face. Like, I think babies are pretty judgy. Right. They give me those looks like, this bitch. Like, I don't need to hear you say or think that. I'm good. I want to know what the plants think. I want some Alice in Wonderland plants that are sitting there like, oh, girl, like, you looking good. I need that. I need that.
So it's 10 out of 10 from both of us.
Absolutely.
That's plants. An easy question. Talk to plants.
Absolutely, plants. I want to hear all the different types of plants. I want to be, I would love for a plant to be able to be like, look, I do not need more water, or I am so thirsty. You know how much easier it would be to keep them alive if they're like, hey, move me out of the sun, or it's going to be cold, just something.
Listen, I just have to say, I've killed a lot of plants in my day. Green thumbs, you know, I don't think that I possess that. I can grow a good plant. Herbs are my best friends.
Yeah.
Pothos, they're going to live. I kill every cactus I have.
I overwater my cactuses every time.
Yeah. So if they were like, stop, I'm drowning, that'd right. be beautiful. You
Way
know?
Helpful. I'm too hypervigilant. I can't just sit by with a cactus. I'm too hands-on with them. I don't want to say lazy. Lazy is a mean word. I'm not able to just like walk by it and like be like, it's fine. Like I'd be like, oh my God, I haven't given it water in a week. Oh no. So plants. Talk to plants.
Yes, plants. We are plant people.
Plant people all the way. Should we make sure we're not out to get shut down now?
Yes. SJM Bestie, please don't sue us. Okay. So this podcast episode contains discussions and commentary based on the series A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah J. Maas. We believe that our use of copyrighted material falls under the doctrine of fair use, as we are providing transformative commentary, analysis, and discussions for educational and entertainment purposes.
We respect the rights of the copyright owner, and our use is in accordance with the principles of fair use under copyright law. Listeners are encouraged to obtain their own copy of A Court of Thorns and Roses series by Sarah J. Maas to fully enjoy and appreciate the work in its entirety. Chapter 21. Favor was frozen. The ring was still in her jacket pocket. The weaver had finished her last song, and Favor was hoping that she would start another. Hoping. The spinning wheel had slowed, and she stepped towards the back door, slower and slower. The wheel spun, and Favor counted only 10 steps to the door, then 5. The wheel spun around one last time, and Favor now counted only 2 steps to the door. As she turned for the door, the weaver reached out a hand, stopping the wheel entirely, and the door in front of Favor shut. She tried to get herself to the window, and the weaver spoke softly, asking who was in her house. Pure fear filled Favor in this moment. She remembered what it felt like to be human and helpless and weak, but also what it felt like to fight, to live, to do anything to survive. The window next to the door was sealed shut, with no latch or opening, just solid, unmoving glass. As the weaver turned to Feyre, she felt animalistic, measuring her chances of survival. The weaver's body was young, covered in long, black, beautiful hair, but her skin was gray, wrinkled, sagging, and dry. Where the gleaming eyes should have been were rotted, black pits. Her lips had withered and were nothing but dark lines around a hole of sharp, jagged stumps. The weaver's lovely young voice asked Feyre, "What are you?" Feyre frantically thought to herself that she had to find another way. She had to get out. She did not want to die. She didn't want to be eaten. The weaver rose from her stool, asking, "What is like all but unlike all?" Feyre reminded herself that she was a wolf, and she bit when she was cornered. Feyre hurled the only lit burning candle towards the wall of woven thread. No, woven bodies, skins, lives. They could be free now. The weaver let out a piercing cry as the fire began in its consumption of the cabin. The weaver made to put out the fire, and Feyre hurried for the hearth. She headed for the fireplace and chimney as her only exit point. It would be tight, but it was still just wide enough for her to make it through. She began to pull herself up, and although she had immortal strength now, it only took her so far. She had become so weak and malnourished, she had allowed herself to be made weak. The bricks within the chimney were uneven and exactly what was needed to climb up. She told herself she needed to go faster. She scraped against the brick, and cauldrons, it reeked in there. The smell was a mixture of putrefying flesh, burnt hair, and there was an oily shine to the stone as she was climbing up, almost like cooked fat. She was almost halfway up the chimney when the weaver's screaming stopped. Feyre could see sunlight and trees, her breaths almost turning to sobs. Feyre broke fingernails, hauling herself up brick by brick. But now she was stuck. The weaver hissed out, wondering what little mouse was climbing in her chimney. Feyre looked down to see the weaver below her, and she realized how little space there was between her and the weaver. She pushed against the grasp the chimney held on her. She couldn't move. In this moment, she felt she would die here. She would be dragged down by the weaver, ripped apart, then eaten. Possibly while she was still alive. Panic began to take over and sent her right back to that place where she was trapped under the mountain or in a muddy trench with the Midgard worm hunting for her as its dinner. Feyre couldn't breathe. Couldn't breathe. Couldn't breathe. The weaver began to climb up the bricks, and Feyre kicked and kicked. She thought to herself that in this moment, she would prefer to face off against the Midgard worm. From the darkness of her mind, she heard stop. Feyre realized that the voice was her own. Stop. She said it. She said it. Said this. Breathe. Think. The weaver was coming closer, and Feyre felt like a fly caught in the web of a spider. Stop. The word quieted everything. She mouthed it to herself. Stop. 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 Think. She had survived the worm. She had survived Amarantha. She had been granted considerable gifts. She was strong. She slammed her hand into the chimney wall, and debris rained down onto the weaver. She slammed her hand again, summoning her strength. She was a survivor. She was strong. She would not be weak or helpless again. She would not be broken. She would not be tamed. Again and again, she slammed her fists into the bricks. A brick she had loosened slid into her hand, and she hurled it into the face of the weaver with all of her strength. Black blood sprayed as bone crunched and the weaver roared. Feyre slammed her shoulders into the sides of the chimney, and she climbed, 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 stones breaking stone, nothing holding her back, and she scaled the chimney. She pulled herself out, not stopping, tumbling onto the jagged roof. It wasn't covered with hay, but with hair. Bile rose as a door in the front of the cabin slammed open, releasing the weaver's shrieks. She had to get up higher, had to get away. She jumped to a nearby low-hanging branch as the weaver screamed. The weaver's screams followed from behind, chasing her. "Where are you? Where are you? Where are you?" Feyre sent down the bond until she spotted him lounging on a tree branch before her. Rhys asked what the hell she had done. "You!" was all she could hiss out at him, breaths heavy and raw. He shushed her with a finger raised to his own lips before winnowing to her. Rhys grabbed her by the waist with one hand and in the back of her neck with the other before winnowing them away, back to Valaris. The free fell above the House of Wind, but Feyre had no breath left in her to scream before his wings appeared anyway, gliding them to safety through the open windows into the house. Cassian and Amrin were in the war room, in the middle of arguing about who knows what. They both froze as Rhys and Feyre landed on the floor. Amrin cringed as she said that they both smelled like barbecue. Cassian asked if she killed the weaver. No, but Rhys was dying to know what Feyre Darling had done, considering all the screaming the weaver was doing when they fled. Feyre could only feel the grease and hair of people on her. She vomited all over the floor right then, and Cassian swore. Amryn waved a hand and it was immediately gone, along with the visible mess that was covering Feyre. Feyre could feel it all still lingering there. Feyre told them how she had been detected and all that she had done to escape. Amryn questioned Rhys as to where he was that whole time. He said that he had been waiting far enough away that the Weaver wouldn't have been able to detect him. Feyre was angered as she could have used some help, but he reminded her that she survived. She found a way to help herself. He had known that she was panicking and let her endure it. Feyre was pissed. That's what this had been about? Managing her panic when it would truly matter when retrieving the book? Feyre pulled the ring out of her pocket and slammed it down on the table. Cassian again swore, and Amryn shook her head. Rhys pointed out that now they knew she could use her abilities to hunt for the objects they needed. She could track the book in the summer court and master her abilities and fears. Cassian called him a prick. Rhys gracefully folded his wings, saying that they would have done the same. Cassian shrugged as a way of saying, yeah, true. Feyre spoke to Cassian, telling him that she wanted him to teach her how to fight and get strong. That is, if the offer still stood. It wouldn't be easy, but they would figure it out, Cassian declared. Feyre was sick of her only option being running. Amryn pointed out that running had kept her alive today. Feyre didn't want to wait for anyone to save her anymore. She wanted to be able to fight her own way out. She turned to Rhys and asked if she had finally proven herself. He picked up the ring, explaining that it had been his mother's, and gave her a nod of appreciation. Feyre demanded to know how he even lost it. He hadn't, though. His mother gave it to him as a keepsake, but had taken it back and given it to the Weaver for safekeeping so that he wouldn't waste it. Feyre was done with the conversation. She wanted quiet and a bath. She needed quiet and a bath. Her knees began to buckle before she could fully look at Rhys. He grabbed her hand, spread his wings, and flew her back to the bedroom in the townhouse. A hot bath was already running there for her. But Rhys stopped to ask her about training, her other gifts. She jokingly yet seriously responded that they would probably shred each other to bits. Rhys agreed they absolutely would, but it wouldn't be fun if they didn't. He told her to consider this training also a part of her official work requirements. He then ordered her to try and get past his shields. Feyre argued that she was tired and the bath would go cold. Rhys promised her that the bath would be just as hot in a few moments, but if she had mastered her gifts, she would have been able to take care of that herself. Rhys practically purring while asking her if she could feel it, her power under her skin calling to her. She fought this off. So what if she did? Rhys shrugged that he was just surprised Ianthe hadn't carved her up to see what the powers inside her looked like. Feyre asked him what exactly his issue with her had been. He only said that he found high priestesses now to be a perversion of what they once were, what they had once promised to be. And Ianthe, she was among the worst of them. Feyre asked him why he would say that. He told her that if she could get past his shields, he would show her. She recognized the bait, but held his stare and let herself fall for it anyway. She found his black, solid, impenetrable shield with no way in. She somehow slipped through before, but was unsure how to do it again now. Feyre told him she was tired of the tests for today. Rhys came closer, revealing to Feyre that the High Priestesses had burrowed their way into several courts. Dawn, day, and winter for the most part. They were now so deep within that they had their own system of spies and fanatic followers everywhere. Somehow they had remained hidden and escaped those 50 years of torture. Rhys suspected that Ianthe was seeking to establish control within the Spring Court. Feyre questioned if he was accusing them all of being evil villains. Some, yes, but not all. Some could be compassionate, wise, and selfless, while others were merely self-serving. Feyre asked which Ianthe was. Rhys opened his mind for her, a small, carved-out space for her to see into. She could now see a large, obsidian, carved bedroom containing an enormous bed filled with ebony sheets and built to accommodate wings. On top of the bed, Ianthe laid across, wearing absolutely nothing. Not a thing. Feyre was taken aback at the realization that this was Ianthe in his bed, in his court, beneath the mountain, in his own memory. Her full breasts were reacting to the cold in the air. From far off, Rhys told her that there was more. She searched for a way out, but there was none. She was trapped here. In the memory, Ianthe sulked that she had been kept waiting. Feyre felt hard, carved wood digging into her back before she realized that it was actually digging into Rhysand's back. In his memory, he spoke, telling Ianthe to get out. Ianthe only pouted and spread her legs wider so that he could see more of her if he so wished. She flirted that she could see the way he had been looking at her. He turned that down, saying that she had only seen what she wanted to see, and the door next to him opened as he again told her to get out. Ianthe played coy and smiled as she trailed her hand lower and lower down her own body, saying that she had heard he liked to play games, and she could be quite the amusing playmate. Feyre felt the icy wrath creeping through him from within his memory, as Rhys had back then debated whether to kill Ianthe or if doing so would just be more of an inconvenience. Ianthe had persistently pursued him and the other males of the Night Court, relentlessly. Azriel had even left the night before because of it, and Mor was one comment away from snapping Ianthe's neck. The memory of Rhysand questioned Ianthe's allegiance. Ianthe told him her allegiances stood with the future of Prithian and its true power within the land. Meanwhile, her finger slipped between her legs and froze. She let out a gasp as Rhys pinned her arm to the bed, and now away from her body. Her eyes consumed him as she asked if he knew what a union between the two of them could do for Prithian, for the world. He corrected that she only meant what a union could do for herself. She appeared amused, as though she could tempt him by saying that their offspring could rule Prithian. Rhys, to clarify, asked if she was wanting his crown and for him to play stud. Ianthe attempted to move, but his power over her held. She continued on that nobody else had seemed worthy of the position, and this moment, he knew that she would be a problem now and later. He knew he should kill her and end the threat before it got out of hand. He could face the wrath of the other high priestesses or just see what would happen. Rhys told her to get out of his bed, get out of his room, and get out of his court. His power released, allowing her to leave, but her eyes only darkened and she rose up, now approaching him, not bothering with her clothes at all, which were also draped over his favorite chair. In an attempt to seduce him further, she told Rhysand that he had no idea how she could make him feel. She extended her hand out, reaching for right between his legs. Rhys's powers lashed out around her hand before she could touch him, and the power smashed down and twisted. Ianthe screamed out, trying to back away, but she was frozen by his power, so much power, easily holding her in place. He contemplated again ending her existence. It would take no effort on his part. Instead, he leaned in close and told her not to ever touch him or any other male in his court again. His power then broke bones and tendons within her, and she screamed out again. He told her that her hand would heal, but the next time she touched him or anyone else in his lands, she would find she would not be so lucky as she was now. Hatred and tears filled Ianthe's eyes, and she promised that he would regret this. Rhys softly laughed and used his power to throw her onto her ass into the hallway. Her clothes followed shortly behind her. The door slammed, the memory ended, and the shield lifted. Feyre stumbled back, now released. Rule one, Rhys told her, don't go into someone's mind unless you hold the way open. A Daemadi might leave their mind spread wide for you and then shut you inside and turn you into their willing slave. He continued on with the second rule, but Feyre cut him off, asking when that memory had happened. He told her it took place 100 years ago at the Court of Nightmares. He allowed Ianthe to visit after she had begged for years, insisting that she simply wanted to build ties between the Night Court and the priestesses. He had hoped because she was young and untested that maybe she was the new change that the High Priestesses had needed. Unfortunately, she was already well trained by her more corrupted sisters. Feyre couldn't recall Ianthe ever having acted that way, though. Lucian had absolutely loathed her. He had been vague about why he did not like her and why he had not wanted to be approached by her. Feyre felt sick. She wondered if Lucian had been forced to say yes to Ianthe because of her position and power. If Feyre ever did go back to the Spring Court, how could she convince Tamlin to get rid of her? Could it be now that Feyre was gone, that Ianthe was... But Rhys cut her off to continue with Rule 2. Be prepared to see things that you might not like. Feyre realized that 50 years after this memory had taken place, Amarantha had come and done to Rhys what he wanted to kill Ianthe for in the past. He allowed it to happen to keep Azrael safe, to keep Cassian safe, to keep them all safe. Rhys protected them from the nightmares that would haunt him forever. He had protected them from going through any more pain than what they had already faced as children. Favor hoped to ask more, but Rhys had already vanished. Favor removed the buckles and straps that he had put on her, what, an hour ago? 2 hours ago? Favor felt as if a lifetime had already gone by since then. She may now be a certified book tracker, but she felt it was better than a party-planning wife meant only to breed little high lords and serve whatever agenda Ianthe had for her. Rhys was right. The bath was still hot, just as he had promised. Favor replayed what she had seen over and over again, picturing Ianthe's hand reaching against Rhys's legs with such arrogance and entitlement in the attempt. She pushed out the memory, and the bathwater suddenly became cold.
Chapter 22. They had yet to hear back from the summer court the next morning, so Rhys, as promised, brought them to the human world. Moore had spent the previous night out dancing and drinking with Cassian and Azrael, but was somehow just as happy as normal. The only issue she had that day was what to wear. The boys, on the other hand, were showing signs of a rough hangover. Moore asked Feyre what she would wear, and Feyre said layers. Humans wore layers, and they covered everything under their petticoats and skirts. Moore only said it sounds like human women weren't used to having fun, or running for that matter. Things must have changed in the last 500 years, she noted. Feyre agreed that with the threat of fairies remaining in the human world, regardless of the wall, she thought practical clothes should have been a necessity. She pulled out an outfit to get Moore's opinion on, and she only nodded. So unlike Ianthe. She tried to get rid of any thoughts of Ianthe and what she did to Rhys, and instead continued to Moore, explaining that now human women got married, had children, and then planned their children's weddings. Some who were poor had to work in the fields, and a handful became mercenaries or hired soldiers, but the more money they had, the less freedom they got. Moore noted that a lot of the Fae were the same, and that in the Court of Nightmares, females were prized for their virginity and then sold off to the highest bidder, the male who would be the most benefit to the female's family. Feyre continued to dress to give herself something to do while she listened to the atrocities of the hewn city. Moore continued saying that she was born stronger than anyone in her family, including the males. She couldn't hide it because her power could be scented on her. When she was 12, she hoped the power meant that no man would want to take her as a wife so she could escape her fate of a loveless, brutal marriage. But when she turned 17, she began to bleed and it made her power come to full strength. She said even the mountain trembled around them, but instead of being scared, every family in the Court of Nightmares saw her as a prize to be won. Her parents were downright joyful, because this meant they had their choice of any family to make an alliance with. Even though Moore begged for them not to have her marry, she was ignored. Feyre had to remind herself that Moore got out of the hewn city before she let grief for the woman in front of her drown her. Moore got out and was now surrounded with people who loved and cherished her. Moore said the rest of the story was long and horrible, and someday she'd tell Feyre the rest. But today she'd come in to say that she wasn't going to the mortal realm. Not because of how they treated women there, but because she wasn't sure she'd be able to control herself there with anybody but the mortal queens present. Rhys had even tried to convince her to go, but Cassian, he understood. Cassian had helped her escape even before he had the rank or power to do so. If Rhys had gotten caught freeing her, it would have been a mild slap on the wrist as a punishment. But for Cassian, he risked everything to free her. He might laugh about how he's a low-born bastard not worthy of the rank he holds, but Moore thought Cassian was worth more than any other male she'd met here. And everywhere. Well, both him and Azrael. As Feyre remembered how he looked at Moore like she was the most beautiful thing he'd ever seen. Feyre was going to press and ask about the history between the two, but then the clock rang 10 times. It was time for them to leave. Feyre's hair was braided back beautifully, with a small diadem weaved in. She had matching earrings and gold bracelets, too. She knew that if she only wore her underwear, Moore would have only told her to own it. "I'd like my sisters to meet you. Maybe not today, but if you ever feel like it." That got Moore's attention. "I want them to hear your story, and to know that there's a special strength in enduring such dark trials and hardships, and still remaining warm and kind, still willing to trust and reach out." Moore only blinked back at her. Feyre went to leave through the door, but before turning the knob, she said, "I'm sorry if I was not as welcoming to you as you were to me when I arrived at the Night Court. I'm trying to learn how to adjust." The words couldn't quite convey exactly how Feyre felt, but it was the best she could do. She wasn't coming up with the words to express how ruined she truly was. Moore opened the door for her and said, "There are good days and there are hard days for me, even now. Don't let the hard days win." It turned out that this day was yet again another hard day. The boys were back together and ready to go, while Amryn and Mor already turned back to Valoris with the mission of planning the visit to Highburn. The only thing Feyre had to decide at that moment was who to fly with. Rhys knew exactly where to winnow them to, and after that they'd need to go by wing. She looked over to see the three dressed in their fighting leathers, herself dressed in a warm coat, and she felt him again. Well, the ghost of his hands on her thigh. She remembered what it felt like to look into his mind and see more than the Dark Lord he was known to be. She felt him, the man who had defended himself, his people, and his friends. Rhys had seen horrible things, things that should make a person turn to the worst, but he had always been so gentle with her. She announced that she would fly with Asriel, not letting herself think a second more, while Rhys and Cassian looked at her like she belonged in a mental institute. Thankfully, Az didn't say anything, but of course. She tried not to be too awkward as she was held in the Shadow Singer's arms and winnowed by Rhys. Feyre warned Rhys to not ruin her hair, which got a laugh from Asriel. It was black and then blindingly bright, the wind pulling them up as Asriel's wings straightened. The expanse of the sea beneath her led towards land on her left, the Spring Court. Her mind began to wander towards Tamlin and if he knew of their arrival. Maybe he could possibly feel them flying towards his land, but suddenly she felt something. The wall. When she was human, she had only felt the wall as an invisible barrier, but as Fae, she could feel it, almost like it was an electric fence. Asriel mentioned how absolutely awful it was, and Feyre noted that she understood why the Fae had stayed away for so long. She tripped in her words then, forgetting to acknowledge that she was also one of them now. Asriel assured her that after a while, she'd get used to it. Feyre admitted that she wasn't quite sure where she even fit in anymore, and Asriel replied, "I've been alive almost 5.5 centuries, and I'm not sure of that either." Feyre attempted to pull back and look at his face, to be able to decipher the words better, but his grip tightened in warning as they entered through the tear in the wall. She was unsure how the men knew exactly where to fly, but they had made it through. The wind immediately began to bite at her skin. Asriel turned mid-air to follow the other two to the base of a snow-covered cliff. She was back in the human lands. Feyre was back home.
I believe we could very easily just get it out of the way and say we both know our favorite quote for this episode.
Oh, did I get chills while reading it and writing it down on my little script here? I sure did. I live and die by this quote. I really do. Mor has got some good words. That will be tattooed on my arm here in the next couple months. Don't you worry.
Do you want to read it for our listeners in case for some reason?
Oh, they didn't hear it every single. So this in the book is page 239. I'm going to read like the little blurb about it because it doesn't make sense if you're saying it by itself. I rubbed the back of my bare neck. I want them to hear your story and know that there's a special strength. As I spoke, I realized I needed to hear and know it too. A special strength in enduring such dark trials and hardships and still remaining warm and kind, still willing to trust and to reach out. Mor's mouth tightened as she blinked a few times. I went for the door, but paused with my hand on the knob. I'm sorry if I was not as welcoming to you as you were to me when I arrived at the Night Court. I was. I'm trying to learn how to adjust. A pathetic, inarticulate way of explaining how ruined I'd become. But Mor hopped off the bed, opening the door for me and said, "There are good days and hard days for me, even now. Don't let the hard days win." And that's why it's our podcast ending, because it's so good. I love it. We'll go back to the very beginning. I'm glad I didn't have to read any more of the Weaver's freaking rhymes.
Goodness.
How did you feel about that chapter, friend?
There was a lot happening. It was very intense. There was a lot of going through the motions of Feyre's panic and anxiety. It felt very heightened.
But she fought it for the first time.
She did. She did.
I was like, hell yeah, girl.
And I know she's pissed at Rhysand for not saving her. But I kind of like that he's like, you did that, though. You didn't need me. I get it. She's mad. But in the long run,
did it help her?
It's just a glimpse. It's the start. It's the spark of the flame where she's realizing I don't need anyone else. And I think in a relationship with anybody, it's way more important that you're not there because you're just needed. You're not there as somebody like they just need you to be there, but they want you there. And by her not needing Rhysand to save her, if anything were to develop, it's because she wants it to, not because she's relying on him.
So, you know how Feyre's been like a little baby bit suicidal?
Yeah, little bit. Yeah, a little bit depressy.
Yeah, a little depressy and stressy. For the first time, she says, I did not want to die.
Yep.
And I feel like that is so underlooked in this chapter.
Pivotal.
And I've been highlighting it throughout this book as like the major plot points. But for me, it's the plot points where Feyre realizes the strength she has. Like before she would have gone, this is hard, fuck it, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done. Like, I don't care. And now for the first time, she goes, I don't want to die. And you know why she doesn't want to die? Because she's got people who care about her now.
Yeah.
She doesn't really know that yet, but Oh, it's so good.
There's something in her that's waking up. She's gone so far in this book saying how tired she is. She just doesn't care. Mm-hmm. And this part, she's like, I'm strong. I am not weak. I'm not going to lay down and die. I am strong. I am a wolf. I will get through this. I want to live. Like you said, I want to live. She doesn't know why, but there's something waking up in her where she's like, I want to get through.
There's a reason. Also, I love here when she starts to have a PTSD flashback where she, like, the Mitigon worm comes back up in her brain and she's starting to go down that anxiety spiral and is feeling all these feelings. And finally, she's like, no, 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 no. She's like, I don't know who said that. And I realized it was me.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, you're doing it, girl.
I love that she was her own voice saying stop. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't Rhysand telling her stop or guiding her. She was telling herself stop. Hold it. Get it together. Hold yourself together.
Think.
Get through this. Right. She was her own guardian angel. She didn't look to anyone else mm-hmm. to come in and rescue her. Yeah, she was pissed, like I said, that Rhys didn't. But she didn't need that.
It's a turning point, literally, because she takes the thought of, like, all these things that happened to me. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, they were so overwhelming. I had to endure this. Instead, it goes, I survived the worm, survived Amarantha, and I had been granted gifts, considerable gifts, like strength. I was strong. I'm not a pet, not a doll, not an animal. I was a survivor, and I was strong. And I was like, girl, we all knew this, but I'm glad you finally got there. I'm very proud of you.
I love that she viewed it that way, because I felt that. Mm-hmm. There are times where I'm like, this is hard, but I've thought back to, I survived losing my brother, which was it was probably the worst thing. I survived.
Oh, I would say, buddy, that's pretty rough.
Yeah, it is. It's yeah. I've survived health issues. I have survived the loss of the closest person in my life. I have survived loss of loved ones. I have survived so many things. And at those times, it's like, I don't know if I can make it through this. But now when I'm faced with things, I look at those moments and think, if I can get through that, I can handle anything thrown at me. So even in your weakest moments, there is that light at the end of the tunnel. This is not the end. This is not the end of my sentence. You will keep going. And I love that she is now at that point where she's realizing, I made it through those things. I will keep going. This is not where I'm ending.
It's an Aelin in the mask moment. That's what it is. This is Feyre's.
But we're not going to get into that.
That's the same transformative moment that Aelin has. But
Yep.
I relate to that as in, like, when I went through really tough stuff in 2018.
Yeah.
And when I was really, really sick from diabetes, right? Mm-hmm. When I was, like, literally in the ICU, they were like, yes. Girl's going to die. If I can live through what I did then, and if I made it through the hardships that I did then on days that I literally could not see the next day in my mind, it was just black. I can make it through anything. So, like, when there's hard days now, I'm like, yeah, this fucking sucks. And do I want to deal with it? No. Or, like, when there's issues in maybe families that are really stressful, does that suck? Yes. Mm-hmm. But is it going to be the end of me or the worst thing I've ever endured? No. It just puts it in big perspective. I'm very proud she had that moment before she climbed through the chimney. What are your thoughts on that? Because that makes me want to throw up.
Which part? Are you talking about the tapestry?
No, I'm talking about the human fat that clings to her body as she goes up through the chimney.
Oh, going through the chimney. Yes. Yeah. Because there was the tapestry of human stuff, and then there was the chimney of more human stuff.
That, the human fat.
The rooftop of more human pieces.
Do you know pre-gastric bypass, I never got nauseous or nauseated from things?
Right.
Never, ever in my life. And now literally the thought of human hair and fat makes me want to throw up. Hey, how does this sentence make you feel? My face was scratched and bloody, and I was covered in dirt and grease, boiled fat and mortar dust, and hair stuck to me, and I smelled like a barbecue.
See, okay, I want to touch on that. Amarin saying she smelled like barbecue? Ma'am.
Which is funny because we think Amarin eats people, so.
Yes. I was like, Amarin. Horrified. And Amarin must not like barbecue.
Also, what are your thoughts and feelings that he risked her life just to get a ring back?
My guy. What the?
Or wouldn't tell her it was a ring?
I mean, we understand why he couldn't tell her, because that was the whole test, was so that she could figure out what the item was.
I know, but still. A fucking ring.
I know. Would that ring better cure disease? It better save Prithian? Explain the ring to me. Why was that ring pivotal? What powers? Because it better be doing something. It better do something.
And he's so cryptic. He literally says, it was my mother's ring. And she goes, how'd you lose it? And he goes, I didn't. My mother gave it to me as a keepsake, then took it back when I reached maturity and gave it to the Weavers for safekeeping. Why? So I wouldn't waste it. Wouldn't waste. What? It's a ring, sir. Why are you wasting a ring? Also, why'd your mom take it back?
We see how easily he throws jewels and different things at Amryn. Maybe to him, it's something that, maybe it's got sentimental value. I don't know. Maybe it is powerful. And his mom thought, he has no concept of the value of money, obviously, because he just gives stuff away and it's not, no sweat off his back. So maybe she didn't want him doing that with this ring. I don't know. At this point, that's my only guess. Because what do you mean waste it? What is wasting it? Is it like you use it, the whatever power it has one time kind of waste? I don't know. I'm very confused and frustrated. I would have been pissy. Yeah. If I were Feyre, I would have been like, what the fuck? No, my guy. You tell me right now how this is going to change the fate of Prithian. And it better be worthwhile, because if it's not, like, fuck you. Fuck you and your ring and the Weaver and all of it. Like, I want a deep, hot, boiling bath, and don't speak to me for 4 to 5 business days.
How'd we go from a ring to learning that we can be frank here, because this is an open podcast. Amarantha basically tried to rape Rhys. Like, that was such a...
No, she did not. I'm sorry. Try again.
She was going to. Amarantha is what I said.
Wrong book. Wrong chapter.
Did she?
I mean, she did. Yes,
that she did. She didn't even try.
That's not in this chapter.
I don't know. I'm tired. Amarantha basically tried to... And I also love how Rhys just made her hands freeze. That's just,
But Ianthe, yes. Ew.
It's just fucking gross.
I like that we are addressing in these books that sexual assault doesn't just happen to women.
Happens to men too.
Exactly.
I don't want to say I love that, because wrong.
I like that it's being addressed. I like that that's not something you typically see being talked about. There's some light on it here too, because that is a very real thing. I don't want to say I'm surprised. I knew something was off with Ianthe. I knew I wasn't thrilled with her, that something was off. It makes sense now. It definitely puts pieces of the puzzle together. Feyre was thinking, oh my gosh, Lucien. Like, oh, that does make sense. That's where Lucien's so disgusted, because we couldn't figure it out what his big issue was.
Why does Lucien not want her?
This would add up. This makes sense. It's gross seeing just how strong of I don't want to say desire, but how strong that part of her is. It's like, man, she is persistent.
Or she was like, I'd be a deserving playmate. And literally he goes, I want to splatter her onto the wall. How inconvenient could that be? I hate her.
Bro, you give me the ick. Not even the ick, the ick. Brother, no. Ew.
She reached a hand for him right between his legs.
There is nothing attractive about not consenting. That's not a playful thing.
No.
I don't know where she got that idea, because to her, refusal is a plaything. It's a game. And no. As someone who has been in a situation where I've made it clear to friends about feelings where that would never develop further than friendships, and that's been completely disrespected and disregarded.
Right.
It doesn't make you endearing. It doesn't make you seem like someone who is romantic or whatever. It's not attractive. It's not a cute thing.
No, it makes you dirty.
To keep pushing. It is. It's gross. It makes you an icky person to me. You have gone from being my friend who I've had to clear, hey, I just don't have those feelings back, to now a person that doesn't respect or understand boundaries and is a threat to me and my safety. And I am not interested. That's ew. But Ianthe, it's the side of her that she's showing to us. It's disgusting.
Well, because he literally says, get out of my bed, get out of my room, and get out of my court. And he says,
several times.
And then she says, you have no idea what I can make you feel, High Lord. He said, no, go, you're done.
Right.
Even in a marriage that is very important to me and my husband.
Yeah.
We consent, even though we're married, is still very much a thing. And we absolutely respect that beyond anything.
Absolutely.
And the fact that she has been told no, and she's still playing around. And I love how he's like, I've been nice, and now I'm not going to be nice. You touch anybody like that again, you're fucked.
Absolutely. Honestly, I think had this happened post Amarantha, she would have just been dead after the first refusal to accept his no.
Oh, yeah. He wouldn't have played around. Not that it was playing around, but he...
No.
You know what I'm saying? He wouldn't have given her that much of grace.
There's something that, like, I tell everybody when it comes to my kid, especially, because I'm teaching my kid that she doesn't need to be a nice person. She just needs to be safe. And if being safe means hurting someone's feelings... then you hurt someone's feelings.
Do you know the quote from My Favorite Murder, the podcast? Mm-hmm. They always say, fuck being nice.
Yeah.
And that's exactly how I feel.
I've always heard like niceness gets you killed. Tiptoeing around people's feelings and trying to give them chances, typically for me, I have found, only makes them feel encouraged sometimes. There are people that only feel like it's still an opening. They can still shoot their shot. It's like a reset, like, oh, I'll try again in a couple months or a week or so. I'll give it another try. Like, no.
No.
If you were told no, that is your answer. Have you seen the trend on TikTok where it's like the silent generation talking about how they met like their spouses, where it's like, grandma, you little victim. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yes. Like, yes. Are you okay? Do I need to call the cops? Like,
I was in middle school and your grandpa picked me up and then we got married. And it's like, what? How old was grandpa? He was 30. What in the world? No.
And it was okay then. And now we're like, hi, that's child abuse. Are you good?
No, no, no. That's not okay. The, huh.
And then what is the whole point of the last page of that chapter? Where Reese is talking about like what his rules.
Well, because she had gone into his mind and he trapped her in there. She couldn't find a way out. And so he was like, you need to be careful.
Okay, that makes more sense. I was like, what is happening?
A refresher real quick. Spark
notes. I'm glad that he told her that because that's important to know.
I'm very relieved that Feyre hasn't encountered apparently any Daemati except for Rhysand apparently and has not been in this situation yet. Because holy crap, she has gone how long with just her shield wide open?
Just hanging out.
And also, if you're not a Daemati, how do you train your mental shields? How? I want to know if that's not something. How? How would you do that?
You know how, like, I'm not able to see things in my brain? Mm-hmm. Would that also mean, like, because he does lots of visualization.
You just don't see it coming?
I would be screwed.
Is it like you play some Sudoku, like you do some crossword puzzles to, like, keep your mind fresh and active? And, like, that's how you build up some mental... What do I do? What's the equivalent of me as a human keeping my mental shields in place? How would one do this?
I would like to be trained. Thank you.
You ever sit there and you're just like... like trying to see like if you could feel something on your brain moving a little bit.
Yeah,
like,
there's nothing.
There's nothing there. Nothing's moving.
I sit there and try to see if I can see something. There's also nothing there.
I just want to understand that. I want to understand what does that feel like? What does that look like? As a kid, as like a middle school, high school, or reading like Twilight, Bella had a mental shield and she had to like sit there and like move them around. Yes. What does that mean? Guys, I need you to explain that a little bit more. Give me a little more than train your shield.
We need to get a fantasy author on here.
I'm going to need, it feels like this. I get that they feel tired. I get that. But what do you mean? Like, physically, does it feel like something is like a layer of skin is on your brain that you didn't realize was there and it's like loosened? Like, what is a mental shield?
I hate that.
I need to know though. Does it feel like a layer of skull, like that you were never aware of? You don't have nerve endings in this mental shield, do you? Explain this to me. I need more.
I don't know.
I've given way too much thought about this. The thought of a mental shield exercise and what it feels like, and like, I just, it's weighing on me, and I feel like I'm not getting...
We must know now.
I need more descriptions. I need to understand mental shielding better because right now I can't connect to it. I'm like, that's cool. I guess she's got a shield. It's like, oh, you got a doorway. Even in Fourth Wing, there's shields. And I'm like, guys, I need to understand.
It's a very normal like fantasy thing. And you're right. We don't have a good explanation for it.
We don't. I need more of a like, what is it? Give me something I can physically connect to what that feeling feels like. You say, I searched around and there's not a ghost. Brain,
where did you search?
Right, like when you feel yourself searching, does that mean like all your feeling goes into your brain, you're like glaze over and you're just like while brain you is walking around the walls of the hallways of and finding someone else's brain? I need a little bit more to the bonding connections and shields and feels. I need more of a physical description so I can understand it a little more. Because right now, I'm not a mental shield. I can't do these things. I need to know it better. I've given way too much thought to this, Abigail.
We're going to figure that out. It's okay. We're going to have to contact Bestie.
I've lost a little bit of sleep. I don't care if it's Rebecca Yarros. I don't care if it's Sarah. Like, I need somebody in fantasy, Brandon Sanderson, whoever touches on these things, to give me a little bit more I can go off of and hold on to when I'm trying to picture bonding and talking and mental shielding, connecting. When you're searching for another bond, you're searching for Reese's obsidian wall. What do you mean you're searching? Are you bumping into like his Lucian down the hall and you're like, oh shit, there's that fire red weird one. It's got a little scar in the wall. There's a big old crack across this wall. Give me something. You know?
Okay, so now I'm going to be on the lookout during these books and see if we can find it.
If there's any of our listeners that they are able to come up with a better idea, a more detailed description into what they think it is physically or whatever, like to have a mental connection, physical connection.
Please let us know.
Yeah, send that in. I've wasted too much time stressing about the idea of this.
It's okay. You know what we don't have to stress about, though? Is my chapter, because besides our favorite quote, there's really nothing happening.
I mean,
there's three important parts. Number one is Moore is explaining like how women are viewed in Hume City. That is obviously important to know. We know it's a horrible place, but now we really know it's a horrible place, and this girl has a backstory that we need to find out about.
This is like pre-women's rights era in the Hume City.
Correct. Negative women's rights.
They haven't got, yeah, very many moons ago. This is a very dirty era that, you know, okay, I'm gonna kind of gear off a little bit. You know how some people are like, I was born in the wrong like decade or wrong dinner. I'm like, are you sure?
Yes.
Do you know what that entails? Because I know we've briefly touched on this.
You sure you want to go back to the 50s?
Right. We've talked about this in like the sense of like race and other issues, but also you realize like the things that you think are nice, like not working, also include you wanted something like a sandwich. You made the bread from scratch and it wasn't for fun. It wasn't a sourdough hobby. It was because you...
I was like, I do that for fun now, but I don't think that counts.
No. It was because that's what you had to do if you wanted to eat.
Yeah, because there was no grocery store like that.
There was no lounging around because you didn't work. It was a different experience.
Also, so many kids. Ew. So many babies.
There were no one and done by choice.
No, it was like tier 700 for your farm. Like, no thanks.
And that's on the lower end. Yeah. So when I think of Hewn City, that's what I think of, is like things are so predated. You think about how fun it would be to live in these worlds. But at the same time, I'm sorry, I like indoor plumbing that I can flush. I really do.
Yes.
I don't want a pot. I don't want a chamber pot. I'm not built for chamber pot life. I was not.
I don't want to have to go sit outside in an outhouse.
I'm not here for it.
Are you kidding me?
Do you ever wonder, kind of also sidetracking here, what a few generations in the future, like when they look back at us, when they're like, oh, they did what? Like, what is it that we do now that's going
to
be like,
they had to use a toilet?
Yeah. You had to walk?
Or like cleaning a bathroom?
You cleaned your own toilets? Ew. You washed your own dishes and put them away?
What is a dishwasher? Is that a person?
You had physical mail? You had to wait for things to get delivered?
Even that now is a little weird. I'm like, just send it via email. Let's go. Nobody has time.
Come on now. Oh, sorry. Back to the point. That was
a lot. Oh, second thing was our favorite quote. Obviously, that's very important.
Yes.
And then third is the very last where Feyre, because she realized she gets too turned on by Reese, is going to fly with Az. And Az is like, you know, flying through the sky, going to the human lands. She has a revelation, which is, I don't really know where I fit in anymore.
Yeah.
And Azrael could have been quiet. He didn't have to sympathize with her. But instead he said, I've been alive almost 5.5 centuries. And I'm not sure of that either. And we all feel that way sometimes. Like me, a majority of the time, I have not FOMO, but fear of being misunderstood instead.
Yeah.
Or like not fitting in.
Or like thinking you know where you stand and then finding out you were wrong the whole time. Or, you know, like...
Oh, you very much don't know where you stand. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or how you stand with people.
Right.
Or how people view you. Yeah, I could go on and on.
I think everyone feels that way a little bit, though, at some point.
And you'd think with the Shadow Singer, with as much as he, like, is able to literally slip into the shadows, you would think he doesn't feel that way. Because that's where he feels
yeah.
his best. But it's nice to know that even as as cool as he seems, sometimes has no clue what's going on.
Well, I think too, Rhysand has talked about how Asriel's powers as a Shadow Singer are incredibly rare. And this is coming from someone whose unmatched power and his Daemati skills are already incredibly rare.
Incredibly rare.
So then to turn and call Asriel's powers dangerous and rare, like that's got to really speak volumes to how very few there are. So that alone probably isolates him and makes him feel very lonely. And I think that Asriel has this moment with Feyre where he can finally kind of connect and understand her a little more than he's gotten the chance to. Because he seems like up until this point, he's been very weary and on edge and careful around her. Like he doesn't really know what to make of her.
Right.
And this has been the one moment where he can think like, I can understand and connect to that. This is his one piece.
I can relate to you.
Exactly. Like Cassian's very welcoming and open and there's plenty of opportunities to really make a connection and a friendship with him.
Because he's a goofball.
Asriel is very guarded as a person, and so to be able to have someone that can understand him on some level is already probably, I don't want to say shocking, but
different for him.
Yeah, it's not something he comes across often. To get that moment with Feyre where it's like, okay, she is in some way someone I can probably understand and relate and trust. Because if you can see how a person thinks and feels, you can probably start to understand them a little better. Because he understands how she thinks and feels because of that, he can understand and feel more open to trusting her. That's my thought on that.
Ma'am, can I tell you our star of the week?
Yeah, I would love that.
We have a lovely star of the week. Xenatine? Is that how you would read it? Xenatine?
I said Xenatine, but I think either one. Just whatever feels right.
Christine, Xenatine. I think that rhymes.
Yeah.
Okay. So our star of this week is Christine from either Xenatine or Xenatine. It's given me Xenon vibes and I'm here for it.
Yes. I felt that too.
Does it not? Yes. Okay, so I'm also going to just nickname her Xenon.
We're aging ourselves. We're dating ourselves right there.
Christine, also known as Xenon. What is it? Of the 21st century.
Xenon of the 21st century.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
Because I'm also thinking Phil of the future. Wow, we are so old.
Oh, I was all about Phil of the future, guys. Oh, man.
That was one of my favorite shows.
Any of our non-American listeners are probably like, what the fuck is happening right now?
Early 2000s TV shows are Lizzie McGuire.
Disney. Early 2000s Disney.
Ugh.
90s and early 2000s Disney.
So Christine Xenon / Xenatine, better known as Xenatine on Bookstagram and BookTok, is an author and book influencer with an obsession for enemies to lover, messy stacks of books, and the cruel prince.
What?
Oh, that's your favorite book, Libby.
Okay, it's not my favorite. It's one of my favorite series. Yes, she's a great author.
Listen, that was a DNF for me, but Christine, good for you, honey. She has 14 editions and a room full of art.
Oh.
Obsessed might be an understatement. Okay, Christine, maybe I should give it another try. It was an Audible book. Maybe I need to read it. Anyway, Christine, I will give it another chance because she's absolutely obsessed. But although Christine is known for her love of books and reading now, she actually studied fine art at the University of Maryland.
Ooh.
And worked as a graphic designer in Washington, D.C., Georgetown, and the College Park area in the late 90s and early 2000s. Yes, she's that old. Miss Ma'am, I was born in 95. Never mind. We are not old. She will understand our love of 2000s things.
There's a new saying that I'm absolutely in love with. It says, give me some time. I'm from the 1900s. And I love that.
I will be using that from now on. She loved the creative aspect of graphic design. But when she had her first child, she resigned from that career to do bookkeeping for Mr. Xenatine's business so she could stay at home and raise her children. FYI, Mr. Xenatine is a contractor. And this is very important later on.
Ooh.
Back to the bio. Being home all day gave Christine plenty of time to daydream while playing with her little ones and read while they napped. It was during this time that the urge to write hit her full force. Christine has always loved writing and even attended a writing camp during the summers while in middle school. Once she was home with her kids all day, her dream to become an author seemed like a possibility. So, in 2010, she started writing every night after her kids went to bed. The first manuscript Christine finished is hidden away in a dark corner of her computer where it will never see the light of day. But in August 2013, she self-published Deviation, the first book in her YA dystopian series about a group of teens who were genetically altered to become human weapons. Okay, love the premise. Might have to read this. Each of these teens have code names like Indonesian mimic octopus, Malaysian ant, and tiger moth because the powers they were given are based off defensive traits of those animals. She had a lot of fun writing Deviation, even though sometimes she forgets she's an author and neglects to promote her own books on social media. Shameless plug, if you have thirst for more books like The Darkest Minds, Renegades, and The Hunger Games, Deviation will quench that thirst. Since 2013, Christine has gone to publish 9 books, including the YA dystopian trilogy Fantasy, an adult rom-com trilogy, and a co-written new adult romance trilogy. She is currently working on two adult fantasies and another rom-com. One of Christine's current work-in-progress fantasies is about the enslaved heroine who is forced to fight in a gladiator tournament with the man who purchased her at an auction. In this story, the contestants wield elemental magic in tournaments across the kingdom. This book was inspired by the fact that Christine has always wanted to be able to wield air magic herself, if only so she can fly. The other fantasy Christine is working on is a steampunk-inspired mashup of Disney princesses, the A-Team, hello 1983, a traveling circus, and fey magic. You'll have to trust her that it all comes together in spicy perfection. That is quite... Bam, I will trust you. And finally, the romance she is writing is a golden retriever slash black cat story about a disgraced daughter of a rock star who decorates rude-themed cookies and loves to irritate and flirt with the local woodworker. Mr. Zenatine Zenatine inspired, perhaps? Since this romance will be part of her original trilogy, she's hired at Nevi Sketches on Instagram to rebrand the entire series with new colors. The first two are complete, and they are so adorable. Since 2010, becoming an author has been Christine's goal, but ending up as a book influencer was a happy accident. She joined Bookstagram in 2016 when she started posting about the books she loved reading while hoping to connect with readers for the books she'd written. Oddly enough, to this day, most of her followers don't even know that she's published books. By the end of 2016, she had over 10,000 followers and was working with tour companies, publishers, and authors to promote upcoming books. Penguin Teen was the first publisher to reach out to her, requesting promotion. Storygram Tours was the first tour company she worked with. 8 years later, she has over 183,000 followers on Instagram and over almost 300,000 followers on BookTok, is fully committed as a book influencer, and has worked with dozens of publishers and hundreds of authors to help readers discover their next favorite reads. She loves using her accounts to show off her messy libraries. Yep, there are two. As well as her secret room hidden behind a bookcase. That is my dream. Christine says the benefit of marrying a contractor is that he regularly builds her bookcases for the piles of books that continue to magically appear in her house. Ma'am, that is such a smart... My dad's a contractor. That is a smart move. One of Christine's favorite parts of being a book influencer is helping people discover new authors and getting more attention for underhyped books. Her favorite hyped read of 2023 was Fourth Wing, along with the rest of Bookstagram and BookTok. Her favorite underhyped read of 2023 was Scarlet Princess. Christine would also feel accomplished if she could get everyone to read and fall in love with Swordcatcher, Divine Rivals.
Yes! Mm-hmm. Oh, I love Divine Rivals.
The chills I just got. I just listened to that on Audible and I've never...
You've listened?
My husband loved me reading that book is all I'm going to say. He really loved that I read it.
I loved it.
It's a great book. It is so good.
So good.
So good. Hounded in anything in the Twisted Sisters write. Her obsession with the Zodiac Academy world borders on unhealthy. I'm also reading that currently. Finally, a book-related bio wouldn't be complete without one final recommendation. If Christine could get everyone to read a book they probably never heard about, It would be This Mortal Coil. Seriously, why does nobody talk about that book? The technology is so cool. You can find Christine at Xenatine. We're saying Zenatine, but it's probably Zenatine on Instagram and BookTok. And I think her BookTok is stinking adorable and her libraries are fantastic. And she organizes her book by colors and it makes my little ADHD heart so happy. I love her.
She talked about wanting to have like elemental wind powers and it gave me very strong airbender vibes and I'm here for it.
She might also be an airbender. Who knows? Anyway, she's also gorgeous. She's got like really pretty red hair and like blue-green eyes. So, Miss Ma'am, you are welcome to be my friend at any time. And you are not old. We're also part of the people from the 1900s.
I'm not old enough to be old. All right. That's not fair.
Anyway, please follow her at Xenatine on both Instagram and TikTok.
Calling all dreamers. We want to hear from you. Send an email to acourtofthornsandpodcasts@gmail.com. Tell us everything, how you found the series, what your favorite or most disliked moments were, your favorite and most hated characters. Ianthe, we're coming for you. Or questions you have for us. Send us your drama. We'll send you our opinions. No promises it's going to be any good. Also, if you like us at all, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or a rating on Spotify. We would love to find more friends. But really, I want to know if you would rather talk to babies or plants. I really want to know, guys. Please send us a DM.
That is the true question.
It really is. It's okay. We're not going to judge you. Not to your face. Not at all. I'm kidding. We're not. We really aren't.
You can already talk to babies and they can understand you. Why? Okay, I have to let it go.
Abby's going to judge
you. I have to let it go.
Abby's going to judge you a little bit. There is a wrong answer, but it's okay if you pick it. It's all right, guys. We'll forgive you. We won't tell you that you picked wrong, But just know you might pick wrong.
We will secretly judge you.
Should we have done, would you rather talk to animals or plants? I feel like that would have been no wrong answer.
That would have been a good question. Well, that can be next week's.
Or you could just tell us right now. Let's make it a third. If we fucked up. But if you would rather talk to babies or plants or animals.
Option number three. Let us know.
To the people who listen and the dreams that are answered.
We'll see you in 2 weeks. And remember, don't let the hard days win.
You can hear me from the dark. Listening on the fly. Makes me taking home my feelings. You in my head, you in my heart. I'm gonna feel dark.
We're gonna fuck up so bad.
I know.